You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
These guys survived the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball. And live to tell about it. It's Flagrant Howls.
Wow, you guys on location. Kyle Tighe, our guy Jim Peterson, on location in Portland. Jim, can you confirm, is Kyle still hungover from the Phoenix Waste Management Open?
Hey, man, he showed up at 7 a.m. to pick me up for golf. So that says something.
And I'm just going to step out now and say that Jim is a really good golfer. So anyone that listens to this, it's like Jim is such a good on the call. He was good in his playing days. There's not a lot of what are you, Jim? 6'10", 7 foot. There's not a lot of 7 footers that just rip 300-yard drives. We were in the elements yesterday. It was a little wet out here, Phil. But yeah, Jim is a guaranteed 85 on a bad day, but on a good day, he can kind of sniff breaking 80.
For sure. Yeah, that could sniff.
He paid me to say
I don't actually get to taste it that often, but I get to.
I actually have, for later in the episode here, we will do a random Wolf of the Week. I do have a golf hypothetical for you guys that I saw on Twitter that I'll run by you here. But this is Flagrant Howls, a Timberwolves lifestyle podcast. The Wolves have one more game against Portland. I kind of like they do this in Portland. They just like go there the last couple years and get a couple games out of the way, and then you stay for a day. And we'll go through the Ringer rankings as well. They came out with their updated top 100 players. But my question to start the show for Jim, we'll start with this is legitimately I think it's the best Wolves roster in the franchise's history. We could debate whether it's the best contender compared to the team from 20 years ago, but you covered that team. You were on the mic for that team 20 years ago, the 03-04 Timberwolves, Jim Pete. How do you compare and contrast the KG, Sam Cassell, Sprewell Wolves that I think I still contend if Sam Cassell doesn't get hurt, I think they go to the NBA Finals and then we see how they match up against that Pistons team. But are there similarities? Are there any sort of dots you can connect between that team from 20 years ago and this team?
Well, I think that, you know, you talk about the most dominant defensive presence in the league at the time. There were a lot of them back in that era too, because like Tim Duncan was tremendous. A lot of the bigs, you know, that San Antonio team was so dominant. Rasheed Wallace, the Portland Trailblazer team, that you think about the Utah Jazz and what they were, a lot of great Western Conference teams. And of course the Lakers and the Sacramento Kings. I mean, there were so many great teams back then. But you know, Minnesota had arguably one of the greatest defensive players in the game in terms of versatility. Kevin Garnett could really guard anybody on the floor. When Flip would play that that 1-2-2 zone. He'd put Kevin Garnett at the top of the zone. It was like it was a thing of beauty, like to see that big wingspan and you know, KG clap. You can just see it, right, Phil? You can just see KG clap his hands, man. And it's one of the things I'll never forget. And so from that standpoint, I mean, there's a parallel there because you could say that Minnesota also has one of the most dominant defensive players in the game right now on their team. So Rudy Gobert, what he's doing this year, bringing you – it's a different defensive dominance, but it's still a dominance nonetheless. And then when you think about the wing versatility too, I think that Latrell Sprewell was an excellent wing defender. You think about Nikhil Alexander-Walker and what he brings. Spree's more like Nov than he is Jaden, I think. The length of Jaden is just – it's, you know, the wingspan and the amount of ground that Jaden can cover is pretty awesome. But those two players, like, you know, Sprewell – was played two sides of the ball. Like he was good defensively as well. And then the head of the snake was Sam Cassell. I think the way that Sam played point guard, so smart and cerebral, was able to get offense and create offense for himself and others, is a lot like Mike Conley, that sort of veteran presence. So I think that this Wolves team, you're 100% right. Cause I've been saying this now since, you know, Tim Connelly's made the acquisitions that this is the deepest, best roster that Minnesota's had. And I think you're also right about Sam Cassell. Had he not gotten hurt, I think Minnesota could have gotten to the finals. They would have beat the Lakers. And I think they would have beat the Pistons too. But I really do think that this is the best roster that they've had from top to bottom. Kevin Garnett is probably better than any player that we have on our roster right now. But the group, though, as a whole, though, has been just a joy to watch this year.
Yeah, and then you factor into what Jim said to us a couple weeks ago. I mentioned that Britt Robson had the same thing, that there's an argument to be made that Chris Finch is also the best coach this team has ever had, right? And Flip Saunders was awesome, as Jim knows. Britt thinks that too. The same day you said it, that Britt said it to Dane. He's like, I think Chris Finch is the best coach in franchise history.
Yeah, well, I was telling you and Dane this at lunch with Chris Hines too. Like, we were talking about it, and I it's somewhat controversial. I think other people would maybe say something different about that, but I don't even think Flip is in the conversation for top three coaches in team history. And in some ways, you know, you think about Tibbs's legacy and about Rick Adelman's legacy. I even think that Kevin McHale was a better coach than Flip Saunders, and I think that, in my own personal estimation, I think Flip would have been a much better executive than McHale had they just flipped roles from the beginning. But, you know, Flip had the coaching bug. I think that Flip was obviously a tremendous coach. But, man, he was so good from an executive standpoint, from an organizational standpoint, from a player talent evaluation standpoint. Flip was so good from that standpoint. And then McHale, I mean, I sat next to McHale for all those years in Minnesota, and we would sit there and talk the game as we were watching practice. And I haven't seen this. Only Kevin McHale could probably get away with this, but Kevin would – he would get – if he saw something go on, this is, you know, can you imagine Tim Connelly standing up and stopping Finch and like, you know, directing the players?
Oh, man.
Something. McHale would stop practice periodically just to get up and interject something from the side. And I'd just be like, it's like, that takes a lot of, you know, gall to be able to get up and stop a coach's practice like that and talking. But you know what though? He was right a lot of ways. And Kevin McHale was, he's just an all-time personality, man. I miss the guy, and he should still be in basketball in some capacity.
Yeah. So is it because those guys had a relationship that went way back, and it's too bad that they wound up not patching it up, but is it because, hey, he's Kevin McHale and he played at a Hall of Fame level in the NBA that he could stop at practice? Or like Tim Connelly is an executive, right? Kevin McHale was like, had fought those battles on the court. So he can probably step in and talk to KG on a level that obviously like a basketball suit who'd never played in the NBA could do it, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, that was the thing, is McHale had the credibility to be able to do it. And the thing is he would get on the court all the time as an executive. He would get on the court and work with guys. And so he had the cachet to be able to do that. It just was funny to see it happen. You just don't see that around the end. You don't see a guy just pop up from the sidelines, you know, getting onto the court. And
Daryl Morey just jumping in real quick. Guys.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, did Vlade Divac do it when he was running Sacramento? I mean, think about
puts the cigarette down, guys. Guys.
Jim, but one of the things that I've, and we talked about this yesterday, that you, not only did you play in the league, but you also coached at, you know, for the WNBA with Sheriff at the highest level. One of the things I'm so pro Finch about is that what percentage in 2024 do you think being a head coach is just managing players and relationships and egos? You know what I mean? Compared to like the X's and O's that we try to dissect, how much of Finch's job is just keeping his locker room in check and motivated?
It's a huge part of it. And one of the things that Finchie told me, because you know, my son Sanjay is coaching with the Atlanta Hawks, and Chris and I were talking about like Sanjay's coaching arc and what Chris, you know, did and what the things that really improved him as a coach. So think about all the years that Finchie spent over in Europe coaching in the British Pro League and coaching in Belgium, and he spent a lot of years being a head coach. He became a head coach right away after he stopped playing. And so he had been coaching high level players for a long time, but he said the best experience that he had getting him ready for the NBA was coaching in the G League, going to coach for the Rio Grande Valley Vipers. Because he said one of the things, like, you know, when you get to the G League and you become a head coach at that level, you are basically dealing with the same kind of problems that you deal with at the pro level, like at the NBA level. Personalities and the issues off the court and the issues on the court and the interpersonal locker room, but, you know, dialogues that go on and things where you put fires out, like between players and all the drama that happens. It's the same kind of stuff. So him doing that as a head coach with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers got him ready for the NBA. And then he did pay his dues too as an assistant. So he had bounced around in different systems. And so when he got this job, man, he was ready. And he's so good at talking to players, and, you know, I just think that that's fantastic. And then meeting with them too, you know, I think that one thing I learned from Cheryl Reeve is that she would meet subsets of groups of players all together. Just individually she'd meet with them, but then she would meet with the captains, and she would give the captains the marching orders of what she wanted to disseminate it into the locker room, how, you know, game plan wise and you know, culture wise. And then she'd meet with just the bench players, and then she would meet with just the post and just the guards. And then she'd meet with like two players to make sure that they knew what their role was. So always redefining roles. And you remember that video session that they had after the Charlotte loss, the come to Jesus they had in the locker room, the video session when Finch was giving marching orders. I think that that role definement is so important. And I think that's where Chris really, really excels big time.
Hey, what's this latest thing now? You know, Finch kind of was asked about Rudy Gobert has been bugging him all year about making sure that the Wolves are playing offense in the fourth quarter by their bench. So, because Rudy's been adamant, it's really important. We need to be able to hear if you make a call. We'll communicate on defense. I've got that. Don't worry about it. And so they did, and it's been. And Rudy's like, yeah, we're 3-0 since we made that change. And Finch is like, whatever makes Rudy happy. We don't really care. Do you guys have any insight just being in Portland on Rudy kind of getting his way and having the offense played near the Wolves bench in the fourth quarter?
Well, Kyle, yeah, you, I mean, go ahead and say what you know, and I'll say what I know.
Yeah, I mean, that was like our topic du jour on Tuesday, because I think Chris Hine for Star Tribune is writing an article on it. And then it was also intriguing because it kind of linked up with this 5-game stretch that their offense has kind of taken off a little bit. But, you know, we asked Finch pregame, we asked Rudy. Finch was just like, whatever makes Rudy happy.
Yeah.
A happy Rudy is a good Rudy, he said, kind of tongue-in-cheek. Mike Conley was like, you know, whatever Rudy thought about it. But guys like Ant and stuff who were a little younger thought it was a big deal because now they're in front of their own bench. They can hear Finch a little more calling out plays, the vibes from, you know, the bench warmers and stuff when they hit a big shot. So to some people it's a big thing. It kind of does make sense, too, to just have your second half action in front of your bench so you can have all the, you know, communication back and forth, especially on the road when it's loud. But some people think it's a big deal. Some people maybe that played, like the big guy in the middle here, probably like, I don't know. But it is interesting that it has kind of aligned with an offensive resurgence, which is something that was bogging them down in January.
Well, look, this is something that coaches have superstition about. Or they may have rhyme or reason about it. There's a strategy to it, and there's a preference. You know, So I noticed it in Milwaukee, and I noticed these things because you come to the arena, and you know, especially when we were on the court. Like now that we're up high, it doesn't really matter as much because we're not down there. But when we're down there on the court, you'd always notice the teams that were different because, you know, most of the time the Wolves would warm up on our bench end, so our coaches would be on our bench. So when we would get there, you know, I'd go sit with the coaches and ask them questions and stuff like that. But now all of a sudden, certain teams come to town. Their coaches are sitting on our bench and it's not as friendly. You know what I mean? It's like, it's different. Yeah. So Utah would do that. Utah did it with Jerry Sloan and they've done it. I think all of the Pop disciples too, because all Pop does it. Pop's done it. Mm-hmm. And all the Pop disciples, they tend to do it. And so, yeah. So I got to the arena in Milwaukee and I go, why are we shooting at the Bucks bench end? Like that's different. We don't do that. And so I was asking Grady, because I didn't go to shoot around in Milwaukee. And then so I said, well, by the time we got down there to do our pregame show hit, the coaches were off the floor, so we couldn't ask them. So I texted some people, and I found out that it was to appease Rudy. And so then we had to find out more about that. And so to appease Rudy, because that's what they did in Utah, right? Quinn did it because he's a Pop disciple. And they continue to do it with Will Hardy because he's a Pop disciple. And so – I just think there's it's a smart move from the standpoint of we've been having fourth quarter troubles, and in the second half we've not always played great. Third quarter has been fine. Fourth quarters have not. And so when players are coming towards you, towards your bench end, it's really amazing. Like in these loud arenas, it's hard to hear the play call. You know, if there is a play call, it's hard to hear what you want to do. So, like, you know, any parroting that can be done, if you can parrot the play call, and so players can know what page you're on. And then they're talking about the vibes too, right? Like our players are down there pumping them up in the fourth quarter. And remember Ant, like in the fourth quarter against the Clippers, remember the shots that he was hitting and he was pointing back at the bench, you know, like it was like so much, like so much fun. But I think those guys really do feed off their energy. And if you can get more communication offensively at that end of the floor late game, I think that's huge. So I think from a strategic standpoint, it's smart.
I love Ant, dude. He was like 0 for 10 in that Clippers game from 3-point range, and they're up by 20 and the game's over. But he's over. It's one of his worst shooting nights of the entire season, and he's still got the confidence to bank one in from the wing and point at the bench. Man, that game, by the way, in that game, I think I have it written down. Cat and Ant were like 2 for 18 or something, or 2 for 16 from 3, and 14 for 14 from inside the 3-point. Just one of the craziest statistical shooting nights. But to go, and then the other stat from the Milwaukee and the Clippers game, it's the first time 778 instances, according to OptiStats, of a team going on the road and playing consecutive games against teams that were 15 or more games over 500 and winning both by 20 points or more. To just be beating the brakes off some of the best teams in the NBA by 20 points in their home building, that's a pretty good sign here down the stretch. We finally have Skip and Stephen A. Smith, or Shannon and those guys, like the morning national shows, are finally forced to acknowledge the Timberwolves on like ESPN and Fox Sports 1. So we're making some progress.
Phil, I was going to say too, today, like obviously he banked in a three in front of the bench again against Portland, pointed at him second half in front of his own bench.
Yep.
Hit that lefty floater off the glass. And then today I went to shoot around gym and Mike and Ant closed out shoot around by having a opposite hand shooting contest. And now Ant's just shooting like 60% from the corner with his left hand. So.
There's a video. He's just cashing left-handed threes one after another.
He's got that. He does. He has a little bit of that Michael Jordan in him where he's just like, let me see what I can do today. Like, can I just kick the ball in from three?
Who was shooting that video, by the way? Was that you shooting it, or was it Dane shooting it?
That was me. We all had
a great job. Kyle did a great job, man.
I'm here to please. Yeah, no, it was that. That was the big story today. Also, too, these guys. Breaking news. I think everyone's ready for All-Star break. Like a lot of those guys have to either fly home tonight or then I know Finchie and those guys have to fly straight to Indianapolis. But it was that, Phil. And then it was also, there's a sweatshirt picture going around.
That Finchie
basically looks like a 1990s hip hop album cover, but it's just got Finch's face all over it. And Mike Conley was wearing that. So I got to get the supplier information on that so we can start selling those sweatshirts.
I love it, man. I love it. By the way, if you're Rudy Gobert, you know, I also would feel insecure and would be looking for anything to suggest if I wasn't one of the top 35 players in the NBA too, which is where apparently, I don't know if you guys saw the Ringer updated their top 100 list. The good news is the Timberwolves have six players in the top 100. Mike Conley, 91, Naz Reid, 82, Jaden is at 72, so respect for his perimeter defense. Rudy Gobert, 40, one slot behind Chet Holmgren, ironically. And then Kat at 27 and Anthony Edwards at 17. Are you offended, Jim, by any of those rankings?
I mean, you know, you start throwing names around. You say, yeah, he's a top five player. He's a top 10 player. He's a top 20 player. You start throwing them around. And you start putting names on the list.
You got to move a name out. Yeah.
And so, Kyle, how many times have we done this, right? You say that guy's a top 20 player. And then you go, okay, you start putting the names on the list. And maybe they are, maybe they aren't. It's like, you know, for Anthony Edwards, I think that saying that he's a top 20 player, I think we can confidently say that, right? And so is he better than Jimmy Butler? I think he's better than Jimmy Butler. I would rather have Anthony Edwards than Jalen Brunson. I would rather have Anthony Edwards than Donovan Mitchell.
Me too. Defense.
I would rather have Anthony Edwards than Tyrese Halliburton. Oh, I mean, Anthony Edwards is a two-way player. So I'm offended for Ant that he's not higher. I personally think Ant should be higher than 17. What do you guys think?
Yeah. So you just fought the fight. I was going to fight the Jimmy Butler, Jalen Brunson, Donovan Mitchell fight. The Tyrese Halliburton fight, I agree on the defense.
Halliburton plays no defense.
Agreed.
He plays zero defense.
I might even fight the LeBron fight.
I might too.
On a night to night, I get in any given moment, LeBron still has the magic and he's still LeBron. But I'm just, it's a discussion right now. It's a discussion. Now LeBron's 39 for God's sake. So it's incredible that he's playing at this level, but I would pick that fight on this list.
I think too that I'm not saying that Ant's a top 10 player quite yet. Devin Booker scores weight. I mean, Devin Booker's good, yeah, man. Like Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, Kawhi Leonard, Shea. I mean, the guys in the top 10 are legit, but I think that he's higher than 17. Your floor.
Yeah, Kyle. And Jim, you did didn't you on the last call? I was at the game, so I didn't get to hear, but you were doing the top five like wins of the season list too. And before the game, we were kind of going back and forth trying to build that list, and that's hard. So, Phil, to your point, when you're making these like lists, or like, oh, he's top 10, or like that, you know, cookie dough ice cream is like a top five ice cream. It's like, okay, that's fine, but you need to give me the list so that I know where mint chocolate chip falls.
You're gonna move cookies and cream out. You're gonna move the fudge out. You know what do you?
But Ant over Jimmy Butler was the one that I'm glad Jim said it, because again, as the commenters say, he knows and I don't. Ant over Jimmy is like, who would you rather have in a one game thing? I think I would maybe still game seven rather have LeBron over an Ant, Phil. So that's where I maybe disagree. But
dude, playoff Ant is even better than regular season Ant. Small sample size.
That's true.
I mean, Rudy at 40 is disrespectful to me.
Behind Şengün. I mean, I like Şengün, but like, what are we doing? Rudy behind Scottie Barnes. Again, long term, you want the 22-year-old kind of Swiss Army knife in Toronto, but I don't know, man. Like, Rudy Gobert is the best defensive player on the best defensive team. Probably need to acknowledge that a little more.
Yeah.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I'm over the same opinion. I really like Şengün, but I even talked to Alperen Şengün when we played Houston at Target Center. I chatted him up just because of his connection to Hakeem Olajuwon. Olajuwon had worked with Şengün, and so I was asking him like how much he really even learned from Olajuwon, because you know offensively he's so skilled. He goes, well, he goes, I probably learned more from him defensively. He goes, even though I'm not a good defensive player. So, So he told me that. He's like, I probably learned more defensively than I did offensively. He goes, even though I'm not a good defensive player, he goes, I'm trying to get better. You know, so he even acknowledged it himself. But I think that, you know, there's a what was the quote that Mike had about Rudy? Because he was saying that, you know, Rudy impacts the game as much as LeBron and Steph do. Was it? I forget the two players that Mike had said.
Yep.
Was it those two, Kyle? Was it?
Yeah, it was Steph and LeBron. Yep.
And so like that. So that's Mike Conley saying it, you know, and go back to the comment section of that tweet is like pretty funny, too, because people are like, that Mike
I thought we promised not to do this. We said we're going to start with the comment section.
Oh, no.
But that's a lot of times the humor on Twitter. I get a kick out of some of these responses. Like, you know what? Who gave Mike access to the marijuana? Like that kind of, those kind of comments.
He's
but anyway, but, yeah. I think it stands to bear that the reason why Minnesota's number one in the NBA in defensive rating is because of Rudy Gobert. And so if the number one team has the number one defensive rating, I think that Rudy Gobert needs to be higher.
It's like we don't know what to do with defense in the NBA. Like even going to the All-Star voting, it's like Rudy Gobert is an All-Star snub because I don't know, we don't really want defense in that game. And then in this case here, we're 100% willing to put Donovan Mitchell with his no defense. I mean, some of these guys in the top 15, Donovan Mitchell, Tyrese Halliburton, not trying to disrespect them, but all offense, all gas, no brakes. And Rudy's sort of the opposite, but we will elevate the all offense, no defense players. I mean, I would say Carl too, this is not the best statistical season we've seen from Carl. You want to go back to some of the years, 5 years ago, he's putting up 24, 25 points, right? This might be the most complete player we've seen, though, in the 8 or 9 years of Carl. He's like second or third in the NBA in defensive net rating, individual defensive net rating. And he's shooting, what, 43% from three-point range. And you know, this is the most complete player we've seen Cat be. And he's 27th now. He might have been 15th on some of these lists a while back. But we don't know what to do with his defense, I guess.
I agree. This is one of Cat's better seasons. And I think that what also makes me respect him more is how much he's sacrificed to be able to do what he's doing. He changed positions. He's giving up, you know, a lot to be able to fit into a team concept, to be a good teammate. So I think there's a lot of players in this list, Kyle and Phil, that wouldn't do that. They wouldn't do it as happily as Carl's done it to be able to be successful.
Yeah. And Phil, it's still, and Jim knows this, he lived through this, it's still like a guards league or a wing league or just a scoring league in terms of promotions. Like the best players right now in the league are probably some combination of like a Jokic and a Giannis and an Embiid. And those guys don't really sell shoes, right? It's the Devin Bookers, the Donovan Mitchell. So the Rudy Gobert thing, not only is it defense, I don't know if the league has fully found a way to like embrace and promote and market the big guys, which the league right now is the best players in the league are big guys. So probably a little bit of a league thing too, but I'm with you. Rudy should have made the All-Star team and should be way higher on this list than some of these guys that are in front of him.
I will say, Kyle, we did move the needle on our shoe conversation with the new Anthony Edwards shoe release. We said, somebody emailed into the show and said, why does nobody else support? Why are none of his teammates wearing his shoes? Why is he the only one wearing his shoes? And we went on the podcast 2 days ago and we said, can Luka Garza get some of the new Ant shoes for guys? And there he is in Cigarza time, shooting threes with his brand new kicks.
I'm going to ask him that tonight because I did see it and I think it's a new thing. I don't think he was wearing the shoes last week, but it reminds me Plumlee on Monday, Clippers Wolves was wearing Harden's shoes. So
okay. It
might just be, you know, the big backup center trying to appease the franchise player. But I'll ask him tonight because he's the only other guy on the team, a team that's predominantly Nike shoe contract and things, wearing Ant's shoes. So I'll ask him tonight.
Yeah. I love it, man. Jim, right now, just before I get to my golf question for you guys, and then we can do a random Wolf of the Week too. Right now in the Western Conference, the Wolves are still standing strong at the top. The wins against the Clippers and the Bucks were maybe not games that you would circle as wins on this road trip, but it's kept them a game ahead of the Thunder and the Clippers. If the playoffs started right now, not accounting for, let's just go 1 through 8 seeds, so not accounting the play-in, you'd have the Wolves and the Kings in a 7-game series. The Kings are just a half game behind the Mavericks. And then you get Suns, Pelicans, like that. I think there's 6 really good teams that are kind of on a different category. Is there a matchup in there that you like or don't like? As you kind of survey the landscape here, the play-in teams right now would be Mavericks, Kings, Lakers, and Warriors, 7 through 10, with the Jazz knocking on the door. When you look at some of those teams, what comes to mind against the Timberwolves?
I think that one of the things that can give us problems are teams that run are physical. So one of the teams that we have not matched up with well is New Orleans. So yeah. Because we have no real answer for Zion. Zion, you know, his career high is against Minnesota. So if you look at his top 10, Minnesota's in three of the top 10, 1, 6, and 10 for Zion in terms of his career high scoring. So
wow,
he had 43 against us last year. And we play against him. We just follow him so much. He puts his team into the bonus in every quarter, it seems like. We have no one that could stay in front of him. Jaden can't stay in front of him. Carl can't stay in front of him. Rudy can't stay in front of him either. And then they have all this great three-point shooting, and they're a team that plays with pace too. So I think that's a team that I don't feel like we match up great with. I don't think we match up great with Phoenix either, so that's a team that does kind of scare me a little bit. But I think if we can get better offensively and more efficient, not turn it over, I think then we can maybe find ways to shut them down. So I really feel like we can play with anybody in the West. Like, I don't think that any real team like really, really scares me. I think that, we have more physicality and size than Oklahoma City. The Clippers, we've seen Minnesota, play with them. Denver is still obviously like a big matchup for them because they've got Jokic and they've got good guard play too. But the two teams that I'm thinking, and then also I think Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington moved the needle for me with Dallas. I think that quietly Dallas did as much damage, I think, against the opponents as much as New York did. And I think New York was kind of across the board sort of thinking that they did the best in the trade deadline stuff. But I think Dallas, Daniel Gafford, he kills us. And then PJ Washington getting more three-point shooting on the floor for them really helps.
Yeah.
See, I think that's really smart because I would say the Pelicans too as like the toughest one because of the physicality. The Lakers can throw physical lineups out there with like, LeBron and obviously AD and like Rui and stuff. I think, Jim, that the best matchups in like the first round would be these ISO heavy teams. Like obviously the Suns have a lot of stars as the Mavericks do. Yes. And then the Gafford points good, but they still run a predominant lot of their offense, just a lot of heavy isolation. Like Luka has the ball the whole time, or like the Suns kind of go my turn, your turn type thing. So if the Wolves can just put these really, really, really all defensive level guys on the other team's best players and not have to worry about too much ball movement or, flow, I think that's their best option. But yeah, the physicality, because when you rough the Wolves up a little bit and maybe you get a tough whistle, that's when they start to kind of lose their heads. So I'm with Jim. I think the Pelicans would be a nightmare first round matchup just because they can put a lot of size and shooting on the court.
Yep. Yeah. And then like in that Clippers game too, they tried to play some small ball thinking this is the Rudy Gobert kryptonite. But I think what we're seeing is if you go back to some of those series that Utah struggled in, the Dallas series and the Clippers series, it wasn't as much Rudy getting played off the court. It was some of the other guys were not holding up their end of the bargain on the perimeter. This is a different, this is with Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards. I don't know that you can just play small ball and, that's the kryptonite in the playoffs in a 7-game series. And now Rudy Gobert is irrelevant, right? You're going to hear that narrative a lot between now and the first round of the playoffs, Jim Peat, but I don't think it's the same situation roster wise as some of the things that Utah struggled with.
No, Rudy got played off more from the offensive side of the basketball. And I just think that Rudy was not the issue in Utah. Like it was not the issue. I think that Finch has done a better job. Rudy feels like more included in the offense here than he ever did in Utah. They didn't really give him the basketball much in Utah. And I think that Rudy is just integrated more here. I think his teammates like him better. I think that the whole vibe here is infinitely better than it was in Utah at the time. So I'm confident that's not going to happen. You can play small if you want to, but I think they're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
All right. I know it's an NBA game day, so we got to let the big fella get a nap because that's usually what, we got to get that afternoon nap in. But Jim,
sure.
We talked about this on yesterday and a little bit Tuesday night. The number one topic after Tuesday's win was a little bit of people wanted to know what was so funny between you and Grady. We talked about this yesterday. It's a little wet blanket here, but it's not nearly probably as, you know, magical as people thought. But you and my, I listened to it this morning, and you and Grady were laughing 10 out of 10. So to kind of just sum it up in terms of, you know, Finchie kind of having a fun official moment, what was it? I couldn't sleep with myself. I didn't ask you. What was it that made you and Grady laugh so hard?
It was, I mean, it was really kind of childish in a sense. It was more you had to be there. I can't say exactly what happened, but I'll just say it was an interaction between Chris Finch and the female official that was hilarious. And so Michael and I, so a lot of times, you know, when we're doing games, you know, I'm looking over here, I'm looking at my computer, I'm looking at the monitor, I'm doing a replay. You're looking all over the floor, but we happen to both be looking at Finch and the official at the same time. And the interaction was just, it was both caught us funny. And so Michael looks at me and I'm laughing and I'm looking at him and he's laughing and we shouldn't be laughing. It's like laughing in church, right? You're not supposed to be doing it, which makes it even more funny. So it just kind of cascaded from there. It was really, it probably wasn't that funny, but it was funny to us. And I, you know, the only other time I've ever done that, because I've been doing this a long time, right? And we try to keep it professional. And for sure, Grady's a professional. That dude is as professional as they come. And for us to both crack up like that, man, it was just childish. It was. And the only other time it happened to me was the show open. It was the Derrick Rose 50-point night against Utah Jazz when Jimmy Butler was the major soreness. It was the general soreness. Oh my God. That was the only other time. But so, yeah, Kyle, we said we weren't going to talk about it. Now you brought it up.
Well, and to clear up again, it was a professional back and forth between an official and Finch. It was just kind of in the moment. Yes. You did have to be there. Chris Hine was sitting up in the media, noticed that
the
official had enough of, and they were getting a tough whistle and stuff. And Jim and Grady, when they sit there, you can hear so much on the court. But so I just wanted to ask you, because I had to do my, journalistic integrity, but also, unfortunately, for the Reddit threads and all stuff, it wasn't probably as fun as you thought you had to be there. But anytime you guys have fun on the call, I know from a fan experience, like real talk, that we enjoy it too. So just keep laughing. And we never want to get back to the yard work discussions we had when the Wolves were getting blown out by 40 back in the day.
I know, but Grady is so great, man. Grady is, I've been just so lucky to be able to work with Hanny and with Benz and now with Grady, because Grady is, I mean, he's just, you guys know, he's 10 out of 10. Like he's got the great pipes, but he's got the great observations, the incredible calls. I like the electric slide call on the Nikhil Alexander Walker, you know, sidestep threes. I mean, he's got so many signature calls now already just in you know, a year and three quarters or whatever. We have a lot of fun and hopefully it permeates through the crowd. You know, people,
it does.
People
enjoy. It does. I love how you so Michael Grady is the consummate professional, and you're like, I don't know, he's professional and you're somewhere in between, but we think you're professional too.
Yeah.
So don't sell yourself short. Hey, one more thing for the road for you, Jim Pete.
Okay.
This is from Lou Stagner on Twitter. He calls himself Golf Stat Pro on Twitter. And he said, interesting question I received in a direct message. So you get to play Augusta National. Have you played Augusta National, Jim?
I have not. No, I turned down Augusta National.
Wow, dude.
When I played for the Houston Rockets, after we played in the NBA Finals against the Celtics, our owner asked me if I wanted to play Augusta, and I told him no. Yeah, wow. I didn't play golf. I had only played golf 10 times in my life by the time I was 24 years old. I did not play golf. And no, so, yeah, I told no. I have two regrets. That's one of them. And then I said no to Coach K when I was in high school. So that's another thing too. That's another topic. I've never played Augusta.
Yeah. His stock was a lot lower then. You know, it wasn't the Coach K that we came to know.
I have like these lifelong regrets of like, I probably shouldn't have bought a Jeep Wrangler. It doesn't get good gas mileage. And Jim's just like, I said no to Coach K.
And Augusta National.
I declined an invite to the moon and I wouldn't play at Augusta. But we'll follow up with that owner, because I think Jim is ready to play Augusta now for sure.
So you now get a second crack to say yes to Augusta National. You guys get to play 8 hours. It's an 8-hour time limit on your round at Augusta National. You have to play from the tips, and you get unlimited mulligans. So you get 8 hours, unlimited mulligans. What could you shoot with those conditions at Augusta? Undulating greens.
I'm gonna speak for him because I watched him yesterday, and I would imagine that hype that question, Phil, doesn't involve a cart. Like, you know, we got
no cart. You gotta walk it.
But Jim and I walked all 18 yesterday. Unlimited mulligans, so you're just ripping shots every time to get a good one. You're almost like your own scramble.
Mm-hmm.
I think watching it yesterday with a hot putter, I think Jim would like break par. So let's say 70.
If I had unlimited mulligans in 8 hours, I would hope I could maybe shoot par. Maybe.
Yeah.
We had this.
You'd be pretty tired, by the way.
I would be really tired, but I would love it. It would be one of those things that I would just I could die at that moment after playing. we had another one. So Jeff Munichke, we had this whole group of guys. We were saying, okay, so if you put your mother, okay, and gave her a putter, and she was 6 inches from the hole, she could win the Masters. Would you say wow. That's right? If you put her 6 inches from the hole. So the question is, how far away from the hole would you have to start on every hole to win the Masters, Kyle?
Oh my God! Well, that's
that's
wait.
That's
so it's 4 days. It's four days, and you'd have to shoot probably 15 under, ish.
Probably, maybe more.
Phil, so we're talking from the tee box, right? So you're saying,
So would it be 100 yards in? Would it be Jeff Munichke said his number was he'd have to be greenside on every hole in order to win the Masters.
So if those he was greens greenside, are undulating
so fast, yeah. You know, if you're greenside, you got to putt it up to the hole. It could, you know, I mean those greens are super hard to figure out sometimes. But I'm just saying, how close would it be? Would it be 100
yards?
You'd have
to average. You'd have to average like a three. Because it's par 72, right? So you'd have to average less than a four per hole, wouldn't you? Because four times 18 is 72. If you averaged four on every hole, you would not win the Masters. So you'd have to average like 3.7 strokes per hole. I mean, 100 yards out, could you get up and down in three and every from 100 yards out on every one of those holes with those greens?
That's the best question I've ever had. So Jim, John Rahm won the Masters last year shooting 12 under. So if you said you and I could start 100 yards out on all 18 holes for four straight days.
Yes.
I don't know. This might be delusional. Again, at least Jim saw my swing yesterday. If you gave me 100 yards out on every hole, I'd win the Masters. 100 yards is my number.
But you got it. So 100 yards out, you got to put it on the green and then two putt most holes.
Again, there were some driving issues yesterday with me, but within 100, I'm pretty solid. So
you got a good swing, Kyle. You got a good swing. It was tough conditions, but you got game. But I'm saying, boy, I don't know.
The greens are tough. That's a good point.
Yeah,
100 yards. That's my answer.
And you can't chunk it in the water, and you can't, you know, you can't.
That's true.
Three putt a bunch of times. Like, I think triple bogey is lurking on every hole. So,
that's the thing. I think you're like underrating how hard it is to putt at Augusta.
No, I am for
sure. If you don't hit a target of a circle that has like a 10-yard diameter, that thing goes off the green, and now you're in the thick stuff, and now it's a six.
It's an interesting question, though. I like both questions though. 8 hours in mulligans, or how far do you need to be able to win the Masters?
You know, so we did something similar like 5 or 6 years ago on our old Mackie and Judd radio show on 1500 ESPN. Judd had not golfed in 20 years, like literally had not picked up a club in 20 years. And he was he's never been a big golfer. And so we went out, we did a live broadcast from, I think it was Prestwick, but it was a golf course somewhere. And so we went to a par three and we filmed this all for like YouTube just to document it. And we asked the audience, so we're going to give him whatever club he wants, no warm-up swings, no range, nothing. He just has to walk up. His first swing in 20 years is on the tee box of a par three that was like 165 yards. What's the over-under for how many strokes it would take him to put that ball in the hole? And with the audience's help, we set it at 7.5. Could he get it in the hole from 165 yards on a par three in seven strokes or less? He pipes a 7-iron, 125 yards. He didn't quite get it to the green, but first swing in 20 years, pipes it right down the middle. So now he's just pitching up, right? It took him a long time to pitch it up. I think he pitched it up and four putted, but he did get it in six strokes. But that's like find a friend that doesn't golf and set an over under and take him out to whatever your favorite golf course.
We tried to do that with Dane yesterday and he refused. But I was like, Dane, let's just get you out here for one hole and see a par five and if you go over under like 13. But that's a good one too. My new mission now is to get Jim Peterson to Augusta. So I'm gonna start working on that.
Yes.
And I'm gonna get you to my club in Minnesota.
Yeah, Kyle, oh yeah. Absolutely.
And Phil's a good golfer too, man. Phil, we'll have fun, man. We'll have fun to win song.
Let's do it. All right, Jim Pete, right. We'll let you go. You're not napping, but whatever you're going to go do before the game, go do it.
See you tonight.
We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, man. See ya.
See ya.
All right, there he is, man. Jim Peterson. You can follow him. Jim Pete Hoops is a good spot to follow him on Twitter/X. Before we get to our random wolf of the week, a shout out to our friends at First Equity, Kyle. David at First Equity is one of the most trusted and respected in the business, and he's a huge Timberwolves and Lynx fan, 20-year season ticket holder. A few years ago, I had a great experience refinancing my home with David at First Equity Mortgage, and a bunch of 20 to be exact of my coworkers and friends over the last 10 years have also had great experiences with First Equity. We appreciate their partnership here on Flagrant Howls. If you want to find out more information about how you can get a great experience with First Equity Mortgage, go to femort.com, femort.com, or scornorth.com, keyword David. Also, our friends at Zero Res are helping to deep clean your homes. So if you only vacuum in light dust, you might want to mix in a deep clean from our friends at Zero Res, which have a 4.9 out of 5-star rating on Google with 17,000 reviews. If you ask for the Score North special, you can get 3 rooms Zero Resified starting at just $119 and a free hallway. And this month takes $75 off when you get your air ducts Zero Res clean. That's 952-ZERO-RES or ZeroResMinnesota.com. Say you want the Score North special. Spell it forward or backwards. It spells the same. Zero Res. All right, boys. That was fun, man. Jim Pete. That's week three of Jim Pete season here on Flagrant Howls every Thursday. And it's been a blast.
This has been appreciate, obviously, the team at Score North helped me get, a credential and all that stuff. But this has been just a stupid week for someone like me. I mean, on Tuesday night, Phil, I sent you the most unflattering selfie in the world, but I was posted up in section 200 or whatever in the media row next to Horton. And then like,
so he's just
minutes,
like calling the game and you're sitting by him.
And Jim and Grady are the best people doing these games, right? Like, I just mean that if I was a Thunder fan, but Alan Horton is the hardest working man in the world. I mean, he kind of had what looked like a gamer setup with like all these sheets and screens, nine different things going on. And he's just by himself talking and acknowledging every little thing that's happening. But like 5 minutes into his call, his producer just gave me a headset. So I'm just sitting there and I was just real talk, eating popcorn, listening to Alan call the game.
Wait, were you watching the game? Were you on the, did you like get to say anything on the broadcast?
I begged them not to let me get on the radio because I don't know what, I don't want to get Alan fired, but it's been cool. It's been also really fun to see that the vibes, I kind of asked Ant about this the other day, like it feels like the last Friday before Christmas break where all these NBA players, like I watched a bunch of games last night and it was bad basketball. Everyone just wants to get a week off, but the vibes of this team, if nothing else, the vibes have never been higher. I mean, again, these guys were they're preparing for a game against the Blazers and they're all having a left-handed shooting contest. So I think this is a pretty locked in team. Credit to Finch, credit to the players, but
take care of business one more time here tonight.
Yeah.
Don't cut out early to, holiday break here. One more 20 point win and then go have some fun. Right.
And let's try not to fake an injury so you don't have to go to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I could just be like, oh, I rolled my ankle. I might be out for a couple days.
It wouldn't actually bother me that much if Anthony Edwards just stayed home, but I know he's super competitive. Even with some of the knee things, he's going to want to go win the skills challenge and go throw down in the All-Star game. But take care of that knee, Ant. Okay. Yeah. We don't need any inflammation. None of that stuff popping up.
Yeah. And then also, too, I can't close the week of pods, and I've done way too many of them without Ross. I texted you this before. Like, I look so forward to this now. This is on par with, like, eating food and showering. It's just like, I can't wait to do Random Wolf of the Week because I'm back, and I still have the lead.
You know, I just actually want to point out and file a grievance. Do you know how tough it is, guys, for me to follow Jim Pete Can we actually put random Wolf of the Week at the beginning?
Dude,
before
I think
you
there's
go
some,
to Jim Pete?
I think there's some producer Ross stands that just look forward to the last period of the show. Now, Ross, you sent us an email and you had the score 6-6. I believe Kyle has a 7-5 lead all time in random Wolf of the Week. So Kyle has correctly guessed
Ross
Antoine Walker. Because you took a 4-0 lead. Antoine Walker, J.J. Barea, Jalen Noel, Sebastian Telfair. That's 4. Omri Caspi, 5. Greg Smith, 6. And then J.R. Ryder last week was 7 for you.
I put it in the wrong category. I'm sorry. It was a rigged system against you.
Oh, the script said that I was supposed to win, huh? Is that what happened? Yeah. But before that, I had a 3-game winning streak. Kyle snapped it with J.R. Ryder. So we'll see.
Okay. Let's get the notes out. Let's do this.
My apologies. It is 7-5. Phil can cut the lead down to 1 with random Wolf of the Week. Here we go.
Ross is going to throw out a series of clues. Kyle and I can throw out guesses whenever we want to. We get up to 3 strikes. If one of us hits 3 strikes, the other one wins automatically. So here we go.
We're going to have to decide, by the way, when does this season end and we start a new one? Probably when the Timberwolves season ends. And then we'll have to name a trophy. Right now, I think the leader is the Shane Heal Memorial Trophy. I think that's...
Memorial? Is he dead?
Well, no, he's not.
Let's just, the Shane Heal Memorial
Maybe
Trophy.
Maybe to
for,
Kyle, but not for to the rest
Shane
of
Heal. The Shane Heal Honorary Trophy? The Shane
Then we'll come up with something. Then we'll have Shane Heal on to present us virtually the trophy. Because that's my... We have to have
you,
Shane
Did
on.
You DM him on Twitter? Weren't you
a couple
reach
times.
Him?
He also probably is thinking, who is this random dude with a mustache at the time that is trying to talk to me across the world? But I'll talk... Jake Painting lives in Australia, so he might be our liaison to establish this bridge.
I'll see what I can do to make it happen. Here is question number one, or excuse me, clue number one.
Okay.
This random Wolf of the Week played for 3 different NBA franchises. So this random Wolf of the Week played for 3 different NBA franchises.
You got a heat check guess? You got a heat check guess?
No, because all the Wolves alum have played for these 3 teams because they stop by here, they get a paycheck when the Wolves are bad, and then they go somewhere else.
What if we made a rule that we each get 1 heat check guess that doesn't count among our 3 strikes after or before Ross's first clue?
I like
Done.
This.
Done.
I like
Amended.
This.
Let it rip then.
I love Kyle's thought, though, that this could literally be 80% of the NBA off of that first clue.
I don't know if I have a. We don't. It's not a mandatory heat check.
Okay.
No, but it's like it's like for golfers, it's like a breakfast ball. Like I'm going to hit that second ball, so I'm just going to say it now because it is pouring rain in the Portland Metro. Make it Wayne himself, Wayne Ellington.
It is not Wayne Ellington.
Okay. Doesn't count.
Nope.
Doesn't count.
Does not count. Phil,
okay. I'll throw a heat check out. Wayne Ellington. That was a good heat check, guys.
I mean, you have what, like a 1 in 340 chance.
something like that.
287, 300, somewhere in there. Okay, I'm gonna go Dean Garrett.
Ooh, good name. Not Dean Garrett.
Not Dean Garrett. Okay.
This
Clippers,
random wolf,
Wolves.
This random Wolf of the Week averaged 12.4 points per game during his time with the Minnesota Timberwolves. It's a pretty good
That's
number.
That's pretty good, man. That's
yep.
Okay.
3 NBA franchises, 12.4 points per game. This goes along with Kyle's point. This random Wolf of the Week spent his 11th NBA season with the Minnesota Timberwolves. This Wolf of the Week spent his 11th NBA season with the Minnesota Timberwolves. This random Wolf of the Week was an NBA All-Star in 2004. Who knows their All-Star history? This random Wolf of the Week, not a native of the United States of America.
Okay. Foreign.
Foreign-born player. NBA All-Star in 2004.
So he was an all-star with KG then, but maybe not with the...
But maybe not with the Wolves. At the time of his drafting, this random Wolf of the Week was the youngest player ever to be drafted at the age of 18 years and 132 days.
Oh, my God. Hold on. Oh, my God.
Kyle might have something. The wheels are turning. The hamster wheel is moving. Do you want me to read that again?
Can you say that again?
At the time of his drafting, this random wolf of the week was the youngest player ever to be drafted. At the age of 18 years and 132 days.
And then, Kyle's got it.
And then can you say the one before that? No, sorry, that's selfish, but I...
Can you use it in a sentence, please?
I like to
language of origin. What one was before that? This random wolf of the week. Not a native to the United States. Random wolf of the week was an all-star in 2004.
Okay.
You got three guesses, Kyle.
You can keep going.
Oh, wow. Oh, it's your show now.
I'm just staring into Phil's eyes right now.
I'm trying to. Well, it's tough because you gave us like an 11. You said 11. He was with the Wolves in his 11th season, but he was. I don't want to talk too much, but
yeah, go one more. Go one more.
I think the next clue's really going to help, so be prepared to shout out your answer so I can differentiate.
We don't have to wait, right? We can yell it mid question.
Yeah, you can just say.
So he was a Wolf during like a really sort of dark period.
I don't know the All-Star stuff, but I will say, if memory serves, the 2004 All-Star team, so the game would have been in the spring of 2004, Flip Saunders coached that team.
Yeah, because they had the best record.
Because they had the best record. So, but Ross, the floor is yours.
This random Wolf of the Week is currently 42 years old.
Andrei Kirilenko.
Yep.
Boom.
There it is, dude.
Correct.
Nice job.
You didn't even let me get to the one-night stand clause.
Because I remember the nugget about when he was drafted, again, obviously coming from overseas and stuff, but the overseas guys, I think for a period of time, were always the youngest players drafted. So, yeah.
Well, it was either a high school, obviously. I was on the, like, American high school track, and then the foreign clue came in. Well, I couldn't put together like the foreign clue and the 18-year-old clue.
Let the record reflect. Kyle leads 8-5.
Eight to five
lead for Kyle.
So
Phil has still won five of the last nine.
Have you done for me lately? League, the random wolf of the week. So
that the 2004 All-Star team, the Western Conference, when back in the day when traditions mattered, Adam Silver. Steve Francis, Kobe Bryant, Kevin Garnett, Tim Duncan, Yao Ming were your starters, and your reserves were Ray Allen from the Sonics, Sam Cassell, AK-47, Dirk Nowitzki, Peja Stojakovic, Brad Miller, and a guy named Shaquille O'Neal. And they were coached by the late...
Wait, Shaq off the bench in that All-Star game?
Does it surprise you guys that AK was only a one-time All-Star? I thought he would have made it more than
that. Yeah, in fact, if you look back at his career, I always thought he was better in my mind than he really is. Let's pull up his basketball reference.
If you guys would permit me, I want to hit you guys with a quick hot take and get your thoughts when we're done with this.
Yeah, to the basketball referencing quick, he was a 31% three-point shooter during his career. But that was on just 1.5 attempts. A little bit of Kyle Anderson to the point where I think he would really turn down some shots. Again, he played in a different era, but he's another one of those guys. If you threw him in today's NBA and he could just shoot like even 34% from three, he was a longer, I think, taller, skinnier Kyle Anderson. I mean, he could play point. He could defend all five positions. I think that's kind of why I liked him. I like those Swiss Army Knife guys, but his tenure here was one of the things that kept me going because that was a dark, dark time, Ross, when Andrei Kirilenko was on this Timberwolves team.
He played amazing defense too, right? He was, you're kind of right. Like he's Kyle Anderson in some ways, but he was also Jaden McDaniels in some ways on the perimeter. He could kind of guard at any position. Yeah.
I was naive enough to think that since they had signed AK-47, that might actually turn out to be a functional and nice season for the Timberwolves. And boy, was I wrong.
Joke's on you.
Yep.
Here's my very quick hot take, gentlemen. It has nothing to do with the Timberwolves, but it has everything to do with the National Basketball Association. And Kyle mentioned his name just moments ago when talking about the Western Conference All-Stars. The Orlando Magic earlier this week, I believe, retired Shaquille O'Neal's number.
Mm-hmm.
Why? He played for you for 4 years. He went to one.
I love this take.
Yeah, he went to one finals for you and spurned you. Yeah. Left you at the altar.
It's also weird that it's happening.
He got.
It's happening 30 years later, too.
Why?
Right?
Why?
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
We're still there.
Oh, there he is. Dane Moore in the house.
Dane, we're just trying to debate if Shaq should have had his jersey retired with the Magic.
No.
Hot take, you think so? Remember?
There was, there's only three players of all time. Chris was telling me this the other day. Shaq, three players that have been had their jersey retired by three teams. Shaq, Wilt, and is this live recording right now?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's not Shaq, live, Wilt, but it is being recorded. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Pete Maravich was the third
Pete
one.
Maravich, okay.
I didn't know this was okay. It's good to see you all.
Yeah, that was that's the Jim Pete was great. That's the best guest appearance in the history of Flagrant Halls.
I got to go I got to go
Dane Moore
my
pontificating. All right.
I don't think I'm wrong here. I know it's my own take, but I don't think
I'm
going
to marinate on that. I'll be ready next year. But next week.
I'm with Ross. I love the take. It's a little bit of a desperate move by the Magic. Why not do it 20 years ago, you know? Just at this point it's weird. Now, the KG thing, maybe we're hypocrites because KG spurned the Wolves. No, KG didn't want to leave the Wolves.
Yes.
Off the top, Ross, I thought you were an idiot there, just being like, well, I don't know, man, Shaq, those fantastic Magic uniforms. I was like, what is he talking about? He played there for 4 years, so essentially his rookie contract. Yep. He did win Rookie of the Year. He was top 10 all 4 years in MVP voting. But, man, you just opened up my eyes. He did nothing. There, I mean, he was an all-star, but I mean, that is
well. He was one of the, he's one of the best. He's the second in terms of points per game, second in Magic history. Can you name number one?
No, Anthony Hardaway.
Not Penny Hardaway. I don't think
Dennis Scott.
I don't think it's Penny. I think it's Tracy McGrady. Right?
Okay.
It's
just Troy
Okay.
Hedo Turkaloo.
What an episode! Kyle's got to go. This is a Timberwolves lifestyle podcast. Flagrant Halls.